When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I'm sorry I have a bit of a cold, so bear with me. You're listening to The Game, the podcast from The Times, chronicling the biggest and best action this season. And not just that, but the North London Derby too. Helping me achieve this today will be Matt Dickinson, Julien Laurens, and we have a debutante. It's Clive Petty. We'll travel to Carrow Road in a short while, but we start at the Emirates. Arsenal and Spurs, which I watched this game on television. Everybody told me what a fantastic game it was, and it was brilliant. So much skill and talent on display. And by the way, this wasn't Sky. This was actual match of the day as well. So I'm guessing everybody's in complete agreement this was the greatest match ever. Dicko, yes?
No.
No. Why, thank you. A dissident dissenter. Dissident dissenting Dicko. How come?
I know, and it was seven goals and a huge swing in fortunes for both teams after a start. But no, I thought, you know, Adebayor should have gone off clearly, but I think it would have been a far more interesting game if it stayed on, because I think Tottenham had been bold, the two strikers, and I think Arsenal were suffering, and I just think it would have been a cracking game if Adebayor hadn't been so damn stupid.
Clive, we'll take a closer look at Adebayor in a minute, but Andre Villas-Boas opts for this 4-4-2 formation, which he hadn't played in the league before this season. What's weird is he kind of used the sort of Defoe and Adebayor. It's difficult to fit them together because of my high line and pressing game and all this jazz. So fools like myself actually believed him when he said there's a good tactical reason why these two guys can't play together. And then, boom, he plays them together. Were you expecting it? Is this something you want to see again?
It is something I'd like to see again, yes. I think, especially at home, I know this was at the Emirates, but watching one man up front, Defoe, running his socks off as a lone player at home is not going to go down too well with the White Hart Lane faithful. And I think on Saturday it did show that I was quite impressed when they came out with the way they started that game. They were the main team in that game for the first 10, 15 minutes. I mean, it could quite easily have been 2-0. And Dicko's absolutely right. The sending off completely changed the game. And so no one knows how it would have sort of panned out. But yeah, I think it is something he should persevere with, ABB. And if we do find that perhaps Defoe and Adebayor, it's not as if he doesn't have options. I mean, Dempsey is still wandering around on the left-hand side a bit, as far as I can see, which is what he kind of did at Fulham. He could bring him in. Bale can do that. I think they're sort of lacking the spark that Van der Vaart kind of brought the team last season when he played with Adebayor, but there are options in that Tottenham team, so he doesn't have to stick with that one player up front. 4-4-2 can work.
Julien, I know you like to laugh and humiliate Spurs, so I disagree just about everything that Clive said, because if you play 4-4-2, you kind of have to play two sort of destroyers in midfield, which you just did with Sandra and Huddleston, and you might do that away from home against Arsenal, but you're not going to do it at home. I mean, could you picture Villas-Boas playing one holding midfielder? Because if you necessarily have to play Sandra and Huddleston or Scott Parker, should he ever come back, then where was the point of signing Sigurdsson and Dempsey and Dembele and all these guys who can actually play?
Yeah, I mean, I find it hard to follow Villas-Boas, I have to say, this season. I've watched them a lot because of, obviously, Hugo Lloris now, so I have to go to Wahar Lane a lot and follow them. But no, but
I think William Gallas would like it if you said you followed them because of him.
True, which is not true. But I'm lost a bit. I have to say, I think he's changing a lot of things. I think he was bold to start 4-4-2. I think once the sending off, he should have taken one of the offensive players off and put another defensive midfielder, and clearly they were far too exposed because Lennon and Bale, you know, didn't defend enough, in my opinion, when they were down to 10 men. And I think what he did at halftime was just completely stupid as well. Sorry, it was completely stupid as well to go three at the back. I'm really struggling to follow him this season, I have to say.
Clive, can you follow him? You have faith?
Well,
he said he dominated the game, right, afterwards?
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, I think that was a bit over the top, I have to say. I'm not quite sure how you can come out with a statement of dominating game and, you know, telling Spurs fans they should have been proud of their team. I mean, you know, take a look at the scoreline, AVB. It was 5-2. There's nothing to be, you know, you just lost. There's only two games outside of games that you're going to win a trophy for or qualify for Europe. There's only two games Tottenham fans kind of want to or don't want to lose this season, and that was one of them. You know, you don't want to lose to Arsenal. And 5-2. So to say, dominating the game, but I suspect he was trying a sort of almost Fergie-esque, Mancini-esque tactic of, you know, we'll talk about what I'm saying rather and take the heat off the Adebayor situation and the fact they got beat. So now we're talking about, you know, I'm saying we dominated the game rather than the fact we lost. But I mean, I was quite encouraged by the fact that, you know, it was 3-1. They had nothing to lose. They came out in the second half and they still kind of went for it. And even at 4-1, at 4-2, they had chances to make it 4-3. They really did. I mean, that may well be down to the basic inadequacies of the Arsenal defence. I've never seen an Arsenal defence look so ridiculously nervous still. Even at, you know, when you're 4-1, 4-2 up at home. I mean, it was ridiculous. I don't know what's going on with that team. They still don't quite believe that they're good enough to keep them out. And I think that was, you know, Spurs could have capitalised on that.
I do disagree with Julian on that. I mean, I obviously had to watch it on TV as well, so you can never be totally sure what you're seeing. But yeah, I thought the tactical switch at half-time, obviously, it didn't work to perfection, but it far from it. But I thought it made some logical sense to go to the three and get the extra body in midfield once you were down to 10 men. And as Clive says, they did have chances and did make Arsenal twitch. So I don't think the performance was as bad as the scoreline.
But Dicko, is it ever a good idea? I mean, you know how nasty people in the media are and childish. Is it ever really a good idea for a manager to say that his team dominated when they ship 5 goals and lose by 3 goals? Is there ever a scenario where it's actually like in his interest and in his team's interest to come out and say that?
Well, certainly not in AVB's interest, because it just seems to add another layer of sort of eccentricity, and he's, you know, the crowd, you know, the crouching on the touchline that I think people make sort of too much of, but they do make something of. And
sorry, can you explain that, please, the crouching on the sideline? Because for our sake, as you know, I'm not from these shores, and we have a lot of listeners who listen to the game podcast around the globe, and you know, y'all have your quirks. But this having a go at him for crouching on the sidelines and the amount of time devoted to discussing it really mystifies people.
It's mystifying, but at the same time, it's compelling. I mean, you know, at Chelsea, where we, and at Tottenham, where you, I mean, he's unlucky that he's chosen to work in two clubs in England where the press sit about 3 feet away from behind the dugout, so you get to see the full show, which often can be absolutely compelling, where you have him sort of prancing around, crouching, stamping, waving his arms like, at times like a sort of matador, at times like a toddler throwing a tantrum. I find it something that's sort of a little bit amusing, but I'm certainly not going to judge him as a manager by it. It's something that sort of it should be commented on as with a sort of with a smile. I don't, you know, no one should be reading too much into his tactical genius based on the fact that he sort of crouches down like he's got a groin made of titanium.
Well, he's obviously done his kegels there. Julian, on the Adebayo red card, I don't think we need to debate it, that nobody wants to argue that it should not have been a red, right? There you go. But our old colleague, Patty Barkley, described the Tottenham assistant, Stefan Freund, who patted Adebayor on the back, as something that rhymes with hillock. Now, is it really such a big deal that, I mean, obviously it was rash, it was stupid. I think it's his fourth red card in England, so he does things like this. But he had to go, but it wasn't like nasty, some kind of, you know, I will wreak vengeance on you, you small Spanish man, right?
Yeah, no. But why then? Why Freund felt the need to, like, sort of pat him on the shoulder, saying, like, either he was like saying, what, well done, what, don't worry, we're still going to win, or I just didn't get the sense of why you would, you know, someone like Fergie or Mourinho, you know, whoever, even a lower league manager would have been so bloody angry at Adebayor, because clearly Spurs were so well in the game that everybody knew at that time that would change and that they probably would lose it. Why would you do that? Why? You know, if I was Villas Boas, if I was Daniel Levy, I would fine Adebayor 2 weeks' wages, something like that, for what he did on Saturday.
Would you fine Stefan Freund too? He is German. Clive, well, you were one of those people, presumably a few years ago, who was cheering Stefan Freund on. You probably had a large Stefan Freund poster in your room. A
collection of Stefan Freund shirts with the name on the back. Yeah, entirely.
Are you okay with that?
I really have no opinion on it one way or the other, really. I mean, apart from the fact it's the sort of tackle Stefan Freund probably used to make himself back in the day. He probably saw a little of himself in the actions. But perhaps he just thought that even Adebayor, perhaps he saw something that even Adebayor had realised, my God, what the hell have I just done there? And so, you know, it was just, okay, away he goes, son. That's the only explanation I can think of. I personally would have just let him wander off straight down the tunnel, straight into a taxi and out of North London, because I didn't really want to look at him then either. Because with Julius, I was thinking, well, that's the game gone. The game's done now.
All right, from one large Francophone striker to his photo negative. Giroud, Dicko, when he looks good, he's tall, he's elegant, chest out, and intelligent player, obviously. When he's not good, he's sloughing chances and looks kind of slow and gets pushed around a little. Are you on board yet after this performance? Did you see enough, even with all of Arsenal's foibles?
Well, the way he took the chance was the sort of poaching, you know, goal that we'd basically given up expecting from him, hadn't we? So, I mean, that was, I don't think I'm going to go swimmingly on board just yet. I think I need to see more. We can say that he's a drastic improvement on Chamakh now, I think, with some confidence. But then so would you be, Gab. I don't think I'm going to sort of rubber stamp it and say, you know, Wenger, great signing just yet. And I wouldn't do that about Podolski either. I think he's been incredibly inconsistent. I would say of all their sort of decisions, but that they should more. There was more evidence of why they just need to get this thing with Walcott resolved and keep him, because, you know, he has a use not just in that squad,
really?
But in that team.
You think so? Even at that kind of money, you'd keep him?
Well, I think, you know, they're disagreeing over, you know, over not a lot as far as I'm aware. They're not, you know, if you let him go for nothing, he's going to cost more, an awful lot more to replace. So,
but don't you wait? But sorry, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because, well, gee, it's not like you haven't known me for years and you don't know that I don't do that. But is he going to cost a lot to replace, or do they have Oxlade-Chamberlain and...
Well, he's a different player. Oxlade-Chamberlain is a different player and who wants to be a more central player. And
doesn't Walcott want to be a more central player too, with all this rubbish on playing centre forward?
Not as a striker. I mean, you know, as a potentially as a... You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain can play wing, he can play inside forward, but there's expectation that he can probably play a sort of attacking central midfield as well. So, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be a Walcott-type player. It's just, you know, if you allow Walcott to go, you're effectively allowing at least, you know, 15, 20 million just to walk out the door. And it's, you know, there is a sensible economy to be had here by, you know, compromising somewhere. You know, they don't have to break the bank, and they can keep a guy who say justify the place in the starting 11, never mind the squad.
Ooh. Well, Dicko's in the Walcott camp, Julien. The flip side of that argument is if you keep him, you're tying yourself up for to spend £20 million on a guy who has fits and starts, and at 24 is probably running out of alibis.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Dicko, though. I think they would keep him. I think if Giroud scored five in the last five, mostly because Theo is back in the team. And I think they've got a great understanding. I think the crosses are coming from the right-hand side for Giroud, for example, mostly by Theo and Sanya as well. And I think Sanya's return was important for that as well. But no, I think, again, I agree with Dicko in terms of it's not much money, I think, in over what they're disagreeing, and I think it would cost much more to replace him and to get then a player at the level he is now.
But you know, you said it would cost a normal club much more, but you know it wouldn't cost Wenger much more because he'd spend £2 million on somebody and they would...
But
it
won't have the same result as what Walcott can bring the team. That's the thing.
Let's get a neutral here, because are you surprised by what you're hearing? I mean, for me personally, I don't think there's many players who deserve £5 million a year. I'm assuming that's it. Arsene, you're the insider, Julien. That's roughly what we're talking here, yes? 100 grand a week?
Yeah.
That range, yeah? To give £5 million to this guy who's had 8 years to kind of establish himself at the club, to me makes no sense whatsoever at this point. You know, you either commit to him or you don't commit to him. They didn't commit to him before. Yes, we can say they should have sold him, whatever. At this point, isn't there an argument to cut your losses? Because if you start paying... Is this exactly what we're talking about, the issue with Arsenal, where they have this enormous wage bill, but then they can't hold on to their stars, and part of it is because the supposed squad players or you know, the guys who are squad regulars but not quite superstars make far too much money, isn't this?
But he's not a squad regular, though, Gab.
Well, whatever the hell he is, he's not a super. He's not one of the top five players, right?
Well, he's a key player, I think.
Is he?
I really do. I mean, I think on Saturday he showed it again.
Who's more important than Walcott at Arsenal?
In my opinion?
Yes. So you can't come up with anybody. You're thinking about
it. No.
So
yeah, I'm thinking.
You?
No, tell me, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Cazorla, yeah?
Yeah.
Vermaelen?
That's one. Vermaelen is more important, our left back at the moment is more important than Theo.
Vermaelen to the team, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you
in
think?
My opinion, yeah.
I think he's been a burden for the last five games, easily. I mean, the mistakes he made against United.
He's playing badly when he's playing a left back. It's not his position, but I mean.
But even in the centre, he made mistakes.
I think Vermaelen's in a. I think I have to agree with Gab. I think he is important to the team. I think he's in a pretty bad run at the moment, and unfortunately, those mistakes are being heavily punished, which is kind of unfortunate for him. But I think he is one of the sort of mainstays, you know, person you'd look for in a very jittery Arsenal defence. I'd hate to think what would happen if Vermaelen wasn't in that Arsenal defence at the moment, because I don't think Mertesacker is the one that I don't get. He's supposed to be incredibly experienced German defender and just gets dragged all over the place. I mean,
He did score a nice goal, though. No, he didn't.
But forget that goal. But I kind of agree with what you're saying with Walcott. I think I quite like Walcott. I mean, you know, he's an exciting player.
But you like him enough to give him £5 million a year.
£100,000 a week for a guy where effectively you're admitting you're still looking for a role for this guy in your team is kind of a lot of money. But having said that, I think you're right. Giroud is benefiting a lot from Walcott being in the team at the moment. I mean, he used to be, you know, I think actually not so much this game, but the game, the Fulham game, the two headers. That's a great dimension to add to an Arsenal team that they really didn't have before. They didn't really score a lot of crosses from, you know, with a guy on the end of it nodding it in. They would just try to work it in the box all the time and took ages. And I think Julian's right. That is, I think, the added bonus of having guys going down wide, getting crosses, and that's Walcott. And he's, as you say, Sanya, which I think, well, actually, there's another guy I would say is as important to that team as Walcott. I mean, the thing when he came back was noticeable.
Moving on to East Anglia and Carrow Road. Norwich against Manchester United. Green and gold versus green and gold. Now, I this is about United. We talked this season about all the comebacks they made, and then it's a question of whether you think it's great fortitude and quality that, you know, which is evidence that you can come back, or is it actually a sign that you get things wrong and then you scramble around madly at the end to get back into it? I'm going to start with you, Dicko. Which is it? Because this strikes me as the kind of game where they sort of waited for the comeback and it never came, and maybe they shouldn't be getting themselves into those positions to begin with.
I'd take your point. I mean, I think the problem in Man United, we just keep returning to the same issues, don't we? Of the fact is that it, most obviously the midfield is lacking. I mean, it's, you know, we can say it a million times and it remains true. I mean, just looking at the marks that we gave them in the times in the game this morning, Michael Carrick 4 out of 10, Brian Giggs 5 in the central midfield, and who comes on to try and change the game? It's Paul Scholes. You know, we can just say we've talked about this before. We'll talk about it again until Ferguson addresses that area. Yeah, there's not another Roy Keane out there, and I was certainly guilty for a while. I think as United were when Keane left, this idea that, you know, English clubs must have an enforcer type. You know, we've moved on from that, but it psychologically, I think it took United a bit, and Ferguson admits himself, I think, that he probably got preoccupied for a couple of years of trying to sort of replace Keane with the next Roy Keane. It doesn't have to be that way. You know, we've adapted and learned that even in England, you don't have to have a guy with his sleeves rolled up charging around intimidating people.
But no, but in a game like
the United certainly lack something in the heart of that team, right. and the robustness and the drive is missing.
But I agree with you, especially in a game like this against. Anybody who's watched Norwich play will know that it's a busy midfield. It's a high-energy midfield. You need at least a little bit of dynamism. And Michael Carrick can pass the ball, but, you know, he's not the most dynamic guy. And he's alongside somebody who's nearly 40 years old. So why would you send that out? I mean, he had Tom Cleverley on the bench. I mean, it was Tom Cleverley. Was he overexerted from his trip to Sweden? Was he keeping him fresh for the Champions League? I mean, how do you explain that, Dick? I mean, you have some insight into Sir Alex.
Well, I can't. I mean,
Anderson, who just runs around. But, I mean, still, it's something, right?
Well, I think he presumably just thought, you know, with Norwich setting up as they do, he probably thought, well, yeah, any combination of my four can match, you know, any combination that Norwich sent out, which, per se, was a smattering of complacency, which isn't justified, as you said at the start, given that they've, you know, they're not dominating teams at the moment. They've relied on a bit of scrambling and a bit of, you know, relying on a great array of strikers. So yeah, we feel like you're sort of smashing this one over the head. It's so blindingly, bleedingly obvious that. That this is, you know, the critical area where United haven't strengthened. I mean, they've had, you know, other issues. The back four has been hugely unsettled, and to lose Vidic is no small thing at all. And, you know, the back four, and they've chopped and changed goalies. So, you know, this isn't one issue, but the central midfield. It's just, I think we're all struck by the failure to address the centre of midfield. It's just one of those ones that you say even a top club with a top manager.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can't begin to understand why it has not been tackled.
Clive, Rooney wasn't there. Tonsillitis, obviously. Kagawa's injured as well. But still, without that, the guys who were there, you expected more. And I mean, we haven't had you on. Where do you stand on this thing that United really aren't playing well, and those like sort of all those comebacks are just a sign of a team that's actually not well?
Yeah, but it's funny. Yeah, it used to be that, you know, everyone says the sign of a good team is when they're not playing well, and you know, they come back and take the points. Well, you know, it's not a sign of a good team that they have to keep coming from behind all the time, especially United. They've got so much. They should be going out, dominating a game, getting it won, and then taking the foot off the pedal. It was a strange sort of lineup as well, because I know it's a Champions League week, but United's Champions League campaign is kind of done. They're through. I mean, this would be the time where you could go out now and make a statement in the league, because now you can rest your players in midweek. You know, Champions League, but it's Galatasaray, isn't it? Yes. It's not an important game. You know, this was a game. Go and get the 3 points. Keep the pressure on in the league. So a shocker to lose to Norwich, it has to be said, as well as Norwich are playing. I mean, we shouldn't take anything away from them. They're on a hell of a run at the moment. I think it's, 6 games unbeaten now, and against, you know, fairly good teams.
Julian, Chris Shuten is one of the good guys. He's arguably a warrior of the light. Norwich this season have, they've beaten a bunch of pretty unremarkable teams like Tottenham, Arsenal, and Manchester United. And yes, that's irony there. Is there a coincidence? Is there a pattern to their performances in those teams? I mean, can you point to something he's done well? Or did he just inherit a brilliant side from the brilliant Paul Lambert?
No, I think he's got good players. I think he's got a good squad. I think.
Aha, so it's all down to Paul Lambert then?
Well, yeah, partly, yeah. I don't think Chris Hughton can get too much credit for putting all that squad together, because he didn't do it.
Tete?
Yeah.
He came up big.
I mean, Tete was the bench for
Rennes. I saw Tete in the flesh against Chelsea, and he was terrible.
Yeah, you know, he had some bad games. Yeah. But trust me, for Rennes, he was never any better than rubbish. Every time he played for Rennes, they let him go, and now he's doing some good things for Norwich. But I do believe, though, that Arsenal, for example, and even United on Saturday, underestimated completely going to Norwich and playing that game. And I think the managers as well made mistakes going to Norwich, Wenger and Ferguson, in the way they selected their team. I think Houlihan is an amazing player, and I think Norwich, you know, it plays some very, very nice football as well, especially at home. And like Clive said, we shouldn't get any credit away from them, because, you know, they've had those good games against you know, big clubs, and I think Hughton deserves some credit as well.
All right, on to our debate topic this week, which has been chosen by our producer, Chris Skinner, so I have no responsibility for this whatsoever. But this is the kind of lower league talk which those of us who are acolytes of the Sky 4 don't really understand, but which apparently is very meaningful to you little people. And again, I am being ironic here. I think it is quite a story. We knew it was going to happen at some point, that the past and the present would sort of collide. MK Dons and AFC Wimbledon, I kind of thought that they would probably end up meet while one slipped down the divisions and the other one came up through the divisions. Instead, it looks as if they're going to play each other in the FA Cup. And I thought this was a good opportunity to sort of revisit this, just over 10 years after Wimbledon played their final game. I wanted to say at Plough Lane, but obviously it wasn't at Plough Lane, it was at Selhurst Park. But Clive, I want to start with you, and bearing in mind that one of our bosses is a Milton Keynes Dons fans, so we need to be very careful what we say. AFC Wimbledon fans are conflicted, some of them. For the long time, I mean, NK Dons have been pariahs, and they're saying they're not even going to go to the game. Can you understand that? As a new, I mean, I'd say I'd want to, if I hate MK Dons, I'd want to go to the game, no, and I'd want to rub their faces in it.
They just don't want to be replenishing their coffers, I think, by actually handing over money to actually walk into the Don Stadium. I can kind of understand. This is, I love this. I mean, this, you know, grudge match movies. We're not building up. This is the sort of madness of a rivalry that football should be thriving on. You know, this is a great story. As long as it stays the right side of, you know, doesn't tip into insanity and, you know, sort of AFC Wimbledon fans turn up there with torches and God knows what else, and, you know, and violence breaks out, which, if you read some of the fans' forums, is always not too far away. But
sorry, but aren't AFC Wimbledon fans all kind of like sort of middle class, like suburban sort of? Yeah.
Maybe I don't. I only know of one, and I have to say that one person got ended up having quite an altercation with the said MK Dons.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Well, let's ask Dicko, because I think Dicko, this is your area of expertise, since you probably live closer to those people.
I think they're geographically they are my localist club. Yes. But no,
so are they like that? Are they all, do they all go organic and shop at Waitrose and like?
Yeah, absolutely. You, you. They only serve soya lattes in the not Bovril, and the pies are made homemade and contain a lot of cardamoms and not cardamoms, coriander. But no, it's. I've been a few times. I know guys are regular down there, and it's certainly the times I've been. Whether I was imagining it or not, it felt just a very happy. It felt a fantastic place to go. There's a nice little ground, which I mean, some say they'll probably move on from, but that everyone sort of, there just seemed a vibe about the whole thing that was happy, and you don't get that at an awful lot of clubs. And there was just something about the support there that there's some sort of sense of communal. Shared joy and just happiness at where they got to. But of course, I went about 6 months, a year ago, and since then things have taken a dip, and they sacked the manager, and maybe have become sort of a little bit more like a regular club where, you know, suddenly you're not just sort of grateful to be alive, you actually sort of start to get a bit frustrated. So I don't know whether that sort of general positivity has started to evaporate a little, which would be a great shame, but inevitable, because there always comes to a time when, you know, the happy clappiness turns to frustration.
Julian, I want to get your take on this, and I appreciate we might have different views here, because of course you're a big fan of a club from a big city that was formed with big money and big sponsors out of nothing and artificially in 1970. Was it 1970?
Indeed.
There you go. Yes. Say hello to Paris Saint-Germain. Whereas I kind of view it as, when you support a club, you're just simply supporting a name and colors, and that's it. And you don't have to support anything else to do with it, and you go wherever, whatever division they're in. But I can understand if going back 10 years, how the FA came to that decision. I don't agree with it. But by the same token, what was all this business with the club's history? How did that move to Milton Keynes? And couldn't they simply have said, okay, Wimbledon's no more. You reform the same club with the same history wherever AFC Wimbledon formed. And we have an open slot here in Winkelmann. You can invent your own club. We release all the players in Winkelmann. You invent your own club in Milton Keynes. Wouldn't that have been a more logical solution? I mean, I know it still wouldn't have made anybody happy. But wouldn't that at least have been a slightly more fair?
Yeah, jump in there. I mean, you know, it wasn't as if there wasn't, I'm not quite sure what the term was. I think they're called Milton Keynes City. There is a football team there. They could have effectively done what AFC Wimbledon did, and then everybody would have loved them.
Not really, because they would have had to work their way up through the divisions. And Wilkerman's here now. He's rock and roll, right?
But that's the way football is, and that's why AFC Wimbledon probably will always feel, and with a lot of neutral fans, will always feel that they have the more upper hand, the higher ground, because they kind of they did a Wimbledon again. They lived the football dream. They worked their way up. That's the whole point of a pyramid. It's not that you think, oh, I've got a lot of money here. I can buy that team and put them wherever I like, you know. Just shove them around. Oh, and by the way, I'll take your, just for good credence, I'll take your 1988 FA Cup final victory as well.
I mean, they had to give that up. Why? If you're MK Dons, why would you want that?
Well, that they did eventually give it up, of course, about 3 or 4 years after they formed, because I think a lot of sort of other fans, supporters groups just wouldn't acknowledge them. That, you know, this, if you're going to call yourself, if you finally admit that you are a new club, then you are a new club, and your history starts from 2002 or 2004. It doesn't start in 1988.
Where is it now? Where is that FA Cup replica now? Is it back at AFC Wimbledon?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah,
Dicko, I want to get you on board because I think it's fair to say you probably have a better understanding here again, but. Let me put you in charge. I don't know if MK Dons have a director of communications, but if you were a director of communication, one of those highly paid communications consultants, what would you tell MK Dons to do? I mean, how should they be approaching it? Because we're getting on to the fact that, you know, it's been 10 years. MK Dons have kids, or so our boss, the MK Dons fan, tells us. There's kids who go to the stadium who've got no, you know, who don't know about the history, and why should they be penalized, and, you know, why should they feel like pariahs and things like that. What would you do if you were MK Dons?
Well, now all you do is, you know, try and stay sensible and respectful, but because the mistakes have already been made and they're very hard to unwind. I mean, obviously the colossal blunder in the first place was to allow this to happen. I mean, it should not have allowed to happen, as Clive says. It's, you know, there's a pyramid structure in place and for very good reasons, and there was, you know, if Milton Keynes can service a professional team, that's clear. They should have done it the hard way. The second mistake was taking the name Dons in the name, which is obviously seals theme as very provocative by AFC fans. You know, they want MK Dons to drop that part, but I just, you know, now that's been established. I think that seems unlikely.
Has it been established? I mean, I'm told that, like, well, sort of 70 years ago, like Manchester City were known as the Citizens, and now only sort of foreign commentators commentating on the Premier League call them that, right? So
we can unestablish that,
right?
They can. Anyone can change a name, I guess. And if, you know, say if I was an AFC fan, I would very much want them to, because this is MK Dons has, you know, has nothing to do with Wimbledon. But that, you know, that's another error of the past that makes this story and makes the sort of whole fury of it so fascinating. I'm quite intrigued by the fact that AFC fans said they wouldn't go. I mean, there's part of me that would want to go there and scream and shout as loud as possible and just pray as much as I've ever prayed for anything that my team win, and I can not only claim the moral high ground but stick it up, MK Dons. But you know, if you're not involved, I guess, because, you know, ultimately this comes down to the heart and soul and passions of football fans. Unless you're one of them in this instance, I don't think we can second guess at all. This is something sort of something in the heart, isn't it? Clearly, and that's again part of the fascination of this story.
It is an unusual story. It's a fascinating story. I said I feel a bit uncomfortable sort of bigging it up, because it was artificially created by a stupid and unfair decision, in my opinion anyway. But let's just hope that, you know, the game goes without incident and people don't use this for their own ends. All right, time now for some quick hits. Now we got a new person with us. Clive, you're familiar with the drill on this. You have 30 seconds to answer. If you go too long, I will start pulling faces, okay?
I'll try.
All righty. When Queens Park Rangers hosted Southampton, one clever headline writer called it El Sacico. And then after that, everybody jumped on board. Isn't that funny? El Sacico. Hee-hee-hee. Given the precarious positions of Mark Hughes and Nigel Atkins. Well, Southampton won 3-1. Julian, if you were Tony Fernandez, you'd be very rich. Would you also be very much looking for a new manager?
Well, I am actually Tony Fernandez, and I am very rich indeed. And I am looking for a new manager as well. So send all your CVs and everything to my my PA, because clearly it's not working with Mark Hughes. I don't think the player is responding to, you know, what he wants to, you know, them the way they. The way he wants them to play and things like that. Just nothing is working, and it's not going to improve at all, I think. I think he got it wrong with transfers as well, and with like tactical choices. So yeah, I'm definitely looking for someone else.
No love for Sparky. Would you replace Key as your option as well?
Well, yeah. We'll definitely. Right. Yeah.
Dicko, you're the biggest England fan here. Following the friendly against Sweden last week, which Z-man would you rather discuss, Zlatan or Zaha, or both?
I think we've done that goal to death, haven't we? It was damn good, but not
that
in my...
Yes, we all read your pieces. So you'd rather talk Zaha, right?
I'm quite interested by Zaha. I mean, not least the fact that he thinks he's the third best player in the world, which is great. He's obviously a confident lad, and he's obviously going to get a move to a Premiership club soon. But I don't think, but until he does that, and until he starts playing regularly, I don't think we'll see him back in the England squad. I think he needs. I think he's got huge promise, but. I want to see him get that move, and I want to see him start doing it at the top level.
How far back do you have to go to find the last time the third best player in the world was English?
David Beckham.
Stop it.
He was voted. I think you're fine. He was voted into FIFA's top three, wasn't he?
Then certainly it must be true, yeah.
But Michael Owen won the Ballon d'Or as well.
Exactly. West Bromwich Albion win again, 2-1 against Chelsea. Clyde, before this week, my Wolves supporting friend, was telling me that West Brom really weren't that good because they hadn't beaten anyone of note except for Liverpool and Everton, and Liverpool really aren't of note. Now that they've defeated the defending European champions, should he be changing his tune?
Yeah, they're better than Wolves by any stretch of the imagination. they were absolutely woeful. It's a great run. It's a great story. You know, it's up there. People are marvelling at Everton at the moment, and they've actually started the season brilliantly. Well, West Brom have done exactly the same. And who would have?
Everton have played better. Yes, maybe. No.
They probably. I haven't seen enough of West Brom, but I mean, you know, everybody always says the league table doesn't lie. West Brom are not up there, you know, up there on merit, surely, you know, and beating Chelsea. It's a good time to play Chelsea. November is always a good time to play Chelsea, it seems to me, whatever year you're in. It's nice that Steve Clarke finally, you know, forever the perennial number two, perhaps, you know, showing perhaps he really does have what it takes to be number one. I'm not sure this story's got legs, let's say that. I think they're probably in the same position as Everton in that their squad. Is nowhere near good enough, I think, to keep this sort of run going. And if Long wraps it up or Odemwingie goes off to the African Nations Cup, then we'll see what happens.
How dare Odemwingie go off to the African Nations Cup and play for his country? Roberto Di Matteo may argue the contrary, but it's pretty obvious that he rested a bunch of regulars at the Hawthorns with a view to the big clash with Juventus Tuesday night. With hindsight, this was obviously a mistake, yes? Or was it actually that Chelsea were pretty unlucky, and then if they didn't have Torres and Sturridge up front but two able-bodied human beings, they might have won?
No, it was a mistake. Don't tell me they can't play, you know, they can't play Saturday and then again the week after that in the Champions League. Mistake, especially in the form they were before that. It's no winning four now. And I just don't understand what he's doing again. I thought, you know, I don't think they were good enough, and it's partly because of the manager.
Ooh, ouch. Dicko, your old pal Roberto Mancini is top of the Premier League. He has the stingiest defense, the second most prolific attack, and the best goal difference. I know they kind of stunk up the joint in the Champions League, but they do get a chance for redemption this week. And are they really going to stack him at the end of the season if he doesn't win the Premier League? Or is it all down to whether they can get the man they call Pep?
They might sack him if he does win the Premier League.
Can't get Pep?
Well, I think Pep's the key, isn't he? I mean, Chelsea would love him. They thought they were doing well to get him. Now, then a couple of Catalans turned up in at Man City in executive positions, and perhaps City are now in the favourites chair for Guardiola. But Man United, if you're a Man United, you'd be mad not to be fishing around for him too. And they've had dinner with Guardiola in New York recently as well. So potentially a three-way chase for him. If I were Guardiola, I would go to Old Trafford. But that's to be resolved. But yeah, Mancini's on shaky ground. as long as he's Man City manager, that's just the fact.
Liverpool roll over Wigan Athletic 3-0, which no doubt makes our boss Tony Evans happy. Luis Suarez scores two goals, even as rumors fly around that he's on City's most wanted list. Now, Clive, this was a bizarre story last week because City immediately denied the speculation and actually hinted that it was Liverpool themselves who were putting this evil story around. I want to ask you, can you see any scenario where it makes sense for Liverpool to sell him, especially if he continues doing crazy bad stuff like he does when he goes and nearly breaks the guy's ankle?
That's the only thing I was going to bring up. Only if he can't possibly keep getting away with those tackles. I mean, not one of them has earned him a sort of the red card that they deserve just yet. Any scenario where Liverpool should sell him? Absolutely none. I mean, they'd be mad. I mean, not only is he the only person scoring, he's the only person who looks like scoring. He's the only person who creates any other chances for anybody else. So Suarez may leave. I can understand that. But Liverpool to sell him, they'd be absolutely mad. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
I would have thought every man has his price.
Gab, one for you. As you can probably tell from my accent, I don't follow the French league very closely. So please tell me what incredible event took place on Saturday when Paris Saint-Germain, the best team in the world, hosted Rennes.
Well, this was, I don't know of any other time that something like this happened, that somebody down to nine men holds out for 39 minutes plus 3 minutes of injury time away from home against a team whose budget is like a million times as big, roughly speaking. I'd have you tell me, because obviously you are a Paris Saint-Germain fan and you do follow the French league rather closely, and my question was ironic, but I don't want to rub it in because I know how painful it must have been. It was simply bizarre. I mean, Carlo Ancelotti, the Paris Saint-Germain manager, came out after the game and said, like, we can't use Zlatan Ibrahimovic's absence as an excuse. We played badly. This is a totally disjointed team of individuals. It's my job to make this into a team. I need to do a better job of that. Personally, I think if Carlo Ancelotti can't manage these big egos, given his track record, I'm starting to think maybe nobody can, and maybe God is punishing Nasser Al-Khelaifi for being too rich, and maybe Leonardo for being too handsome, and Ancelotti for being too good. It's the only explanation I can find, but all credit to Rennes and their incredible goalkeeper, Chekhinjay, who started one game for them in the past 8 years, and in that game turned into sort of some kind of combination of Gigi Buffon, Iker Casillas, good Joe Hart, not bad Joe Hart, and Godzilla, and saved everything in sight. That's all we've got time for this week. It's been fun. It's been real. Come find us on Twitter to share your thoughts. I'm on there. Clive, you're on there as well. What's your Twitter handle?
CP01.
CP01. Isn't it obvious? Think sort of C3PO, but then with other numbers and letters in there. Matt, you're on there, of course. Dickinson, The Times. And Julien, you are there at?
Yeah, Lawrence Julien.
Lawrence Julien. Just like Julien Lawrence, only backwards. You can go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. My web chat on a Tuesday, as well as my blog this week on a Tuesday as well. It's a double treat if you like listening to me or reading my stuff. If not, then tell me how much I stink. Till next time, bye bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.